When you sit on the shores of Lake Michigan or Lake Superior, you might be enjoying the view, or you might maybe you're looking for shorebirds, or maybe you're checking conditions for a tour by kayak, maybe, or powerboat. But how often do you stop to think about what fragments of our state's maritime history might lie many yards beneath the surface? Just as we walk on top of the ground, probably don't think much about what might be buried feet down. Water can be covering a whole lot of history and mystery. And our Great Lakes have some great stories to tell. Tamara Thompson is a maritime archaeologist with the Wisconsin Historical Society. She provided many of the photographs in a wonderful new book. It's called Great Ships on the Great Lakes, a Maritime History. And Tamara, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you with us. And I'm sure there are going to be questions from listeners. We have many who are maritime history buffs. What fascinates them? We'll probably hear about that. As you listen, have you spent time on the Great Lakes? You wonder what might be below the surface in a particular area? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Well, now, you're an underwater archaeologist, and we're going to talk more about that, but let's talk about the history of the Great Lakes a little bit, too, and that led to there being all those things that you can go and see underwater. What significance did the Great Lakes have before, let's go back, before widespread European settlement, even?
Well, the Great Lakes, you can really think of them as an early roadway. Before we had roads, before we had rail networks, it was really the means of transportation. And so it was much easier to get from place to place by just using the waterways. So we know that the native peoples used the waterway way before white man settlement here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it continued on and even continues on today. We still see very large 1,000-foot freighters on the Great Lakes moving bulk cargoes around, and they're even doing it now, even through this very cold weather.
Yeah, so they're still at it. They play, mm-hmm. even played, if I'm not mistaken, a big role in some of our conflicts and wars as well.
Absolutely. So you don't really think about the Great Lakes when you think about the Revolutionary War or when you think about the War of 1812. But really, there were some important battles that happened here on the Great Lakes to decide what the boundary was for our country.
And the book, Great Lakes on the Great Lakes, A Maritime History, it's written for young readers, although I'm not young, but I enjoyed it myself, and I certainly enjoyed your photography. You're a wonderful photographer, and the photos are wonderful.
Thank you very much.
So, why a young audience? Why is it important to introduce these stories and topics to a younger audience?
Well, this particular book is written for fourth grade, really through junior high readers. So it's really to sort of spur an interest in our maritime history here. Originally, there was a book that was written, which was called Working with Water. The authors of this particular book had worked here at Wisconsin Historical Society for many years before they moved to the NOAA National Marine Sanctuary in Thunder Bay, Alpena, Michigan. And when they moved there, they wanted to think more regionally about the Great Lakes. Our history and the way that people got here really doesn't end with Wisconsin borders. It really is a more regional history of how immigrants came here, how the state was developed. And so this book came out of that. So this book really is a partnership between Wisconsin Historical Society and the NOAA National Marine Sanctuary at Thunder Bay.
We have a 10-year-old and a fifth grader, so this is kind of like right in the wheelhouse. So I'm looking forward to taking this book home and having Emily read it and get her reaction to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's talk specifically about underwater archaeology a bit. How long has it been practiced?
Well, goodness. I can tell you underwater archaeology in our state has really been around for about 25 years. So our program started after the Abandoned Shipwreck Act of 1988 gave title to the Wisconsin shipwrecks or anything on the bottom lands to the state. And so it's really all of ours to protect and enjoy. And our program started shortly thereafter. And since that time, we've worked on numerous shipwreck sites around the state, but also inundated fur trade sites. We're going to go up to the Apostle Islands in the next couple of years and look at abandoned quarry docks, which are there.
Oh.
And so there may be cultural items that fell off the dock. And we're going to do a really detailed look at those particular sites, too. So when you think about shipwrecks, it's more than shipping. It's also the connection to the land.
And how does it differ from land-based archaeology, then? Is it?
Well, when you're underwater.
You're not digging, or maybe you are digging. Yeah, I probably are.
In some cases, you can do some excavation. This last summer, we had a class in from East Carolina University, and we did some excavation on a shipwreck, which is just in front of Bay Shipbuilding in Sturgeon Bay. So we do have, on occasion, to do excavation. However, most of the time, we just document in place what's there. It's called a Phase 2 archaeological survey, and we write up what's there, catalog what items remain with the shipwreck, and then really share that with anyone that will listen to us to enhance their visitation of the site. And they can visit by snorkeling, by kayaking, or by scuba diving. Sometimes you can even see just by boating over a site, since our waters are so clear, all the way down to the shipwreck site and be able to see what's down there.
Isn't it amazing to me that you can actually see some of these shipwrecks and they're still there and haven't been dragged out and or something done to them?
Well, many of them have been removed. We have about 750 known ship losses in Wisconsin waters. Of those, we know where 162 are. So
still a few out there. And we're going to talk some more about it with our guest today, Tamara Thompson, who is a maritime archaeologist with the Wisconsin Historical Society and took part in this great book called Great Ships on the Great Lakes. News next. The history of the Upper Midwest is fascinating, I think. It's, you know, you think about the native tribes who first populated it, the fur traders later, the later settlers and merchants, many people who have lived and worked in the region. And it's no surprise that the Great Lakes dominated both the landscape and the lives of those people. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. While many of these eras have passed, there are still stories to uncover quite literally under the waters of the Great Lakes. And we're lucky to have with us Tamara Thompson, who is the maritime archaeologist with the Wisconsin Historical Society. She provided many of the photographs you're going to see in a wonderful new book. It's called Great Ships on the Great Lakes, a Maritime History. And once again, Tamara, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. What kind of artifacts are you likely to, and we talked earlier about land-based versus water archaeology and specifically what it is, and what types of artifacts are you likely to find?
Well, a lot of times when you have these sites that we go and visit, these shipwreck sites, and we know that they have gone down at a particular date, they're really a time capsule of what would have been on the ship, what's aboard the ship, what the crew would have carried. And so it's a real point in time that we can go in and look at things that would have existed in this life, things that they would have taken with them to see. So it's pretty interesting to be able to go to these new sites. Things are being discovered all the time. We had a couple of shipwrecks discovered this year even. And to look at what's still there, what didn't get washed away, what went down with the ship, what these men were not able to take with them when they either evacuated the ship or when, unfortunately, they died aboard.
What does water do to the remains of a wreck?
Here in Wisconsin, the wrecks are very well preserved. So we do have shipwrecks that are in our shoreline, and those are a little bit more broken down or exposed because of either higher low water level or because of ice raking over them. But when you get out into the lake and you get into some of these deeper sites, a lot of times they'll look like you could float and sail them away. Mm. And everything is still aboard. Everything isn't still in place. And they're very, very well preserved.
And in the book, you talk about some of the significant sites for underwater archaeology. Where in the Great Lakes are the most significant sites?
Well, I'd like to say they're all in Wisconsin.
But they're not.
Well, they are all over. But one thing that we can hang our hat on is that here in Wisconsin, we have 53 shipwrecks which have been listed in the National Register. And in fact, that's more shipwrecks individually listed on the register than any other state. So we do have quite a few very important sites that are right here in our backyard.
And some of the best excavated ones, what are some of the best ones?
Well, I think most of the excavation that we see now is taking place over in the Mediterranean. So excavation is just not something that's practiced here in the Great Lakes because we don't have salt water. We don't have worms that will crawl into the wood and break down the wood. There's very low oxygen levels at the lower depths within the lake. The zebra mussels now are cleaning up the water very well. They are being kind of aggressive on some of the wooden vessels and deteriorating some of the iron and steel hulled vessels a little bit faster. But it does make for very easy videography and photography of these sites. And it does draw in tourists more because it cleans up the water.
Are there any that are virtually untouched? Absolutely, I would guess, because there's all kinds you don't even know about. But, I mean, of the ones that we do know about.
Well, as I had said before, the Abandoned Shipwreck Act gave title to Wisconsin shipwrecks or to state shipwrecks in 1988. So after that time, it became illegal to remove artifacts from the wrecks. And so a lot of these wrecks, local divers have stopped removing or moving around artifacts on them. And so they're very much as if they went down the day that they went down.
John in Richland Center, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to ask a question about the Edmunds Fitzgerald. I know it was 860 feet long, mm-hmm. and there was 29 lives lost, and it went down on Whitefish Point.
Yeah. And any comments, Tamara? What can you tell us?
It's certainly one of the most noted losses within the Great Lakes. So it's not in Wisconsin. It's not in Michigan waters either. It's actually across the border in Canadian waters. And the Canadians are very protective of the site. They do have a radar over it. So you, if you come close, they know what vessels are out there. And we know that many of the artifacts were recovered, or some of the artifacts were recovered and are in a museum at Whitefish Point. So if you'd like to go and visit some of them or know about the history of the Edmund Fitzgerald, I would suggest a trip up to Whitefish.
Whitefish Point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's located?
It's in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And
wanted to make sure we got that. It wasn't in Wisconsin. It was in Michigan.
Wisconsin. Yeah.
But that's easily found. And it's a museum, Edmund Fitzgerald. If you put that in a search engine, you're going to get
it. Yes.
Yep. Thank you. Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hey. I'm a little embarrassed by my question because I think it's probably not true. But I just have this idea that I've heard about German U-boats coming up the St. Lawrence Seaway and prowling around the Great Lakes. Is there any truth to that?
Do you know anything about that, Tamara? Or have you heard anything about, read anything about that?
I think I've heard of this American Life episode about German U-boats coming into, I believe it was Boston, and landing some immigrants. And I believe the story goes on about German immigrants that were from the Chicago area on that. But I'm not very familiar with the story. I do know that there is a U-boat in Lake Michigan. It was claimed as a war prize and taken around the Great Lakes, and then because of a treaty, they actually had to get rid of it, and so it is sunk off Chicago area. So no one is letting us know where it is, so it hasn't been dived on yet.
Oh, so there you go. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can also go to my Facebook page. The Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. Wendy wonders if you know anything about the ship that was revealed just north of the power plant on the beach outside of Illinois Beach State Park. Small wooden boat that was supposed to be part of the submarine builders.
I don't know anything about that one. I was sent a picture of it, because we're in my job is with Wisconsin Historical Society, and so most of my work ends up occurring within Wisconsin waters. So I don't know what's been followed up with that, but a good start would be to contact the Chicago Underwater Archaeological Society. It's a group of avocational archaeologists, and they could probably give you information on that.
Okay. And you can join in, too, again at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. What types of records do you refer to when you're researching the history of the wrecks that you're working around or looking at?
Oh, just last week I got back. I was down at National Archives in Chicago, so it's a big repository of federal documents, and we were looking for information on lawsuits that kind of occurred after the sinking of the steamer Lakeland. The Lakeland was carrying automobiles. Kind of a neat history, if you have a second, that we can. It left Chicago with automobiles and stopped at Kenosha and took on some Nash automobiles, and then at Racine and took on Kissel's, and encountered a storm. This was December 2nd, 1924. Put into Sturgeon Bay to wait out the storm. And the next morning, they set out from Sturgeon Bay. It was a bit calmer, and they made it about 6 miles off outside of the Sturgeon Bay Canal, inside of the life-saving station. And the boat ended up sinking. And so there were lawsuits that ensued after this about insurance fraud, perhaps, that happened with the vessel. And so we just spent 3 days down at National Archives going through those. Also, all of these vessels have enrollment documents, which are sort of like when you register your car. Mm-hmm. They would have to do these every year or every periodically when they changed owners or districts. And that information reveals a lot about the history of the vessels as well and who was involved.
Well, that would be fun to dive down and take a look at those cars, wouldn't
it? Absolutely. So we actually did. We spent 2 weeks out there this summer, and we had a couple of videographers who volunteered to come out with this very high quality production grade video that were from the Minneapolis area. And we spent 9 days. Weather we were fortunate with to get inside the shipwreck into every little nook and cranny of it, and we were able to videotape all of the cars that were there. There are 23 cars that are still on the wreck, and I took them and showed this video to car experts, so antique auto experts, and a lot of the cars we were able to identify down to not just the make, but the model as well, based on the remains that are down there.
Wow, I bet you those men and women were drooling when they...
It's been an exciting adventure, especially since I really don't know that much about cars. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, now you said there were two ships found this past year. Was that... What were those ships?
There was one that was discovered just north of Two Rivers. So there's a nice lady that sent me a photograph of what she thought was a shipwreck, and of course it was, and it was just off of Point Beach State Forest. And we found a little bit of time to go out and put a tape measurer on it. And because of the length of the vessel and the width of it, we were able to narrow and compared to historic losses that were in the area, we narrowed it down to really only being a barkentine that was lost in 1871, which was known as the Major Anderson. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. Major Anderson, most people name their ships after their girlfriend or their mother or someone in their family, or, you know, kind of a cutesy name. And Major Anderson, I didn't know much about, but Major Anderson was the hero of a Civil War hero. And in 1861, when the ship was built, he was the one that led forces on Fort Sumter, held Fort Sumter. And so in 1861, there were four ships that actually were named Major Anderson on the Great Lakes. But this one, they had commissioned a painting to go across the stern of the ship with a mural of the Battle of Fort Sumter.
Oh.
So I don't know if it's still there.
Yeah, you wonder. Probably not.
We would have to do a little excavation because there's still an awful lot of sand on the site. But what's really neat is that it sank October 7th, 1871, which, if you put that date in history, is the time that regional fires were sweeping. So Great Chicago Fire, Peshtigo Fire. So it kind of puts it in that context of the history of our region.
Dan in Plymouth, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes. I was wondering if you just could comment on the, when our kids are small, we used to hook them up to the mystery ship up in Michigan, I think it was Escanaba, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And is it still there or whatever, what happened to it, if not, whatever?
Mm-hmm. No, there's actually nothing left of that ship. It was brought up. The idea was to take it around, sail it around the Great Lakes and preserve it. But unfortunately, they couldn't get the funding to restore the ship. And they brought it into Menominee, Michigan. And if you go to Menominee, there's actually a mystery ship marina, which is there, which is where the ship was and deteriorated. And eventually they bulldozed it. And it's likely under the parking lot there. So that's another reason why we should leave things on the bottom, is because it's very, very expensive to preserve these things and to, you know, to restore them and to keep them to a state of preservation.
The kids, we found it quite interesting, you know?
Yeah. This whole area is really fascinating to me. And kids, I think all kids would be interested in things like this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan, for calling. Deborah in Milwaukee, I want to give you a chance to join in. Deborah, hi. Thanks for calling. Deborah, are you there? Oops. Do I have her on? Let's see if I get her on. Now I have her on. Hi, Deborah.
I grew up here, and my mother said that her grandfather or great-grandfather was an admiral in the Navy. And then her cousin, this is my point now, He's written an extensive book about the history of the Upper Peninsula. Before he died, one of the conversations I had with him was about the SS Badger, which was an icebreaker, and it's now a retired boat in Mackinac City, Michigan. And he said his great-grandfather, or I could have that wrong, designed it, and they called it his baby. So do you know any information about that?
I don't, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
That I wish we could help you out there, but we can't. But maybe where would be a likely place to look for something like that?
If you know the name of the ship and the years that it was built, you can look in the enrollment documents of the particular ship. So those are located at the National Archives in Chicago for this region. Mm-hmm. And it will give information on the shipbuilder and information on who the captain and the owners were at particular times in the history.
All right. Thank you for calling, Deb. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Rosa called in earlier and wondered if you can describe what it's like moving around in an underwater site. You know, most of us are never going to get that chance.
Yeah, some of these sites are absolutely well preserved, and you can go down and it looks like you're in almost a Disney film. You can see from bow to stern on some of these ships. The ones that I prefer are the old wooden sailing vessels. In a lot of cases, the masts may still be standing, and you can swim along the decks and look in the cargo holds. And ships like the Christmas tree ship, the Rouse Simmons, still have Christmas trees which are stacked in the hold. Mm. And so you can really put yourself sort of in that place and time.
Many people have asked me this question, and it's one we really haven't discussed on the air, I don't think, but and that involves remains of people. If And there have to be on some of those ships.
Yeah. There are some human remains we know of. We know that there were losses with some of these vessels. We try not to disturb them. I personally haven't come across any human remains on the sites that we've been working on. Most of what we do is document in place, and so we don't move a lot of sediment. But I imagine if we did, it would be likely to find human remains. So. Mm.
We have some other callers online. Mike in Adams County next, I think. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was listening, and I heard someone asking about German U-boats in the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
There was a World War I German U-boat that was brought into the Great Lakes, into Lake Michigan, is actually at the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry right now. It's on display. It was taken across Lakeshore Drive when I was a child. My dad took me down there, and they laid railroad tracks and took it right across the drive, and it's parked at the museum right now.
Yeah.
That's one of the exhibits that they have there. It's actually really interesting to go and see. You can walk around inside. It's a paid exhibit at the Museum of Science and Industry. And then, as I had said, there is another U-boat, which they intentionally sank, which is in Illinois waters.
Yeah, the Museum of Science and Industry, that is, thanks for reminding me about that, Mike, because a couple months ago now, I guess, that my wife and daughter and I visited the museum and actually went through that. It was fun. Interesting. Thanks again. Chuck in Beaver Dam, thank you for calling. Oops, let's see if we can get him on here. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. I had two quick things I wanted to add to the conversation. One, the lady who called just a few minutes ago asking about the icebreaker that was retired up in the Straits of Mackinac.
Yeah.
That's actually, I believe she's referring to the Coast Guard cutter Mackinac. It was replaced a couple of years by a ship built over in Marinette, Wisconsin,
okay,
which is also called the Mackinac, but that's the major icebreaker for the Upper Great Lakes region. And something else I wanted to point out is that for a lot of these folks, there's a website out there called boatnerd.com, BOATNERD. It's a private group that's just basically interested in what's happening on the Great Lakes with the history and commercial shipping and even tracking boats today. And if you got questions about that, there are some wonderful resources on that site. And links to old pictures, and if you want to find something out, someone on that site can probably help you.
Ah, thank you, Chuck. And you're familiar with that site, Tamara.
It's actually a lot of fun. You can, if you're into following the vessels that are currently out on the Great Lakes, Boat Nerd tracks them as well. So for ship sighting.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you, Chuck. So boatnerd.com. Maybe we can put that up on my Facebook page. This is as a reminder to people. Someone wondered about your favorite historical shipwreck story.
Oh, my goodness. There are so many. I really do think that it's probably the Rouse Simmons, which is a story that many people know, but they probably don't know the difference between the fable and what actually happened. So we did a forensic study of the shipwreck site in 2007. And we discovered that, based on historic documents, that she probably didn't go down in the blinding snowstorm. In fact, she probably had sunk many hours before the snowstorm started. And when we used the logs from the life-saving station and plotted where they went in search of the vessel, they actually circumnavigated where the site was. So that we know that had she been afloat at 3 p.m. on the afternoon of November 23rd, 1912, they would have been able to rescue her. We don't actually know what caused her to go to the bottom, but we can rule out a lot of the myths. I have no doubt that there was a really horrible storm that came afterward, but I think the ship was on the bottom before then.
Tamara, a great pleasure. Thank you so much, and thanks for your great work on this book titled Great Ships on the Great Lakes, A book for fourth graders through what?
Probably junior high is a good reading level for them.
Yeah, fourth through junior high. But you know what? I liked it too. And so did Judith. We both liked it. Thank you so much for talking with us. Tamara Thompson, maritime archaeologist with the Wisconsin Historical Society, in the book titled Great Ships on the Great Lakes. Thank you for listening. We're going to talk about the Civil War period. There's a couple of books out on that. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network.